think the first step of one's podcasting strategy should be, what of all the possible outcomes, what is the one I would want my podcast to do for me? Is it to grow my network? Is it to get speaking gigs? Is it to get people into my Facebook group? Is it to get people to buy my video course? Is it to, for people to buy my book? Is it for people to hire me as a consultant or coach? I think that that's really the first question. And then everything has to basically lead to that direction. So the content you publish, the format you choose, the content you create, the people you interview, if you interview people, the platforms you promote your podcast on, all those factors should be basically pieces of the puzzle, which is your ideal goal.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi, innovators. It's great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far, and I also hope you've enjoyed our most recent interviews with Ty Crandell and with Paul Colligan. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Jan Ilunga. He's a podcasting consultant, a podcast host, and a web entrepreneur. And he's my first guest from Helsinki in Finland. Jan helps entrepreneurs, small business owners, coaches, and authors successfully plan and launch a podcast. And he works with independent podcasters, helping them to identify ways to market and grow their show. He's also the founder of the world's biggest digital conference about podcasting, which is the Podcast Success Summit, and the creator of the podcasting educational site Podcast Success Academy, as well as host of 4 podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the hub at InnovaBiz.co/VIP. If you don't yet have an account, just click the blue Take a Peek Inside button and check it out. As I said, it's free and exceptionally useful. In our discussion today, Jan talked to me about the keys to being strategic about your podcast. We talked about how to squeeze the most out of your podcast content, and we talked about the importance of experimentation. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Jan Ilunga. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Helsinki in Finland. I think this is the first guest we've had from Finland, Jan Ilunga. Jan is a podcasting consultant, a podcast host, and a web entrepreneur. He helps podcasters, marketers, and coaches with podcast strategies, with systems, with marketing, with hosting, and with podcast guesting, and also with building their community. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Jan. It's a real privilege to have you as a guest.
Jürgen, the pleasure is mine. I'm so ready to get my InnovaBuzz up.
Great. Yeah, well, we should have fun today. Jennifer Longworth, who was on episode 150 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested we speak with you, Jan. So big hello to Jennifer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're also founder of the Podcast Success Summit, which is the biggest online conference about podcasting, and you're creator of the Podcast Success Academy, which is an online learning site. And you host 4 podcasts at last count. Now, I may be out of date there. It might be more, but your website says you've got 391 podcast episodes created, which is very impressive. So obviously an experienced podcaster. And as a podcaster myself, I'm really looking forward to geeking out with you about all things podcasting.
Love it.
Now, before we start talking about podcasting and podcast strategy and systems, let's find out a little bit more about your background. Where did you start your journey, and how did you get to where you are today? What were some of the pivotal moments?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to answer that question, Jürgen. Well, I'm originally from the Italian-speaking part of Switzerland. So yes, there is people who speak Italian in Switzerland, and no, I'm not Italian. You can kind of guess from the macaroni accent that there is some Italian roots there, but I'm originally from the Italian-speaking part of Switzerland. And as you said, I've been calling home Helsinki here in Finland for almost 8 years now. And my background is actually in communication. So I have a bachelor's and master's degrees where my major was communications and media. And after I did my bachelor's in Switzerland, I traveled across Europe for a couple of months and wanted to do my master's abroad. And when I was in cities that I liked, I would check what kind of degree programs the universities there had. Mm-hmm. And Helsinki was one of the options. So I ended up here. I was doing my master's at the University of Helsinki. And while I was doing that, I also wanted to do my own thing. I was working as a journalist, but I've always been interested in doing something for myself in a way. And one day I came across this thing called podcasts. I had no idea what they were. And I'm a person, Jürgen, I could literally listen to music pretty much 24/7. And I think I was studying for an exam or something like that. And maybe for the first time in my life, I was like, well, I don't feel like listening to music, but I'd still would like to have something in the background. And so I just did a random Google search, really. I found podcasts. I started to listen to them and I was like, oh, this is really fascinating. And this could be something I could actually do myself. And then I asked myself the question, well, what angle can I go into the podcasting world from? And then I remembered the years I worked at a music festival, at a jazz festival. And I said, well, because I speak 5 languages, at the festival, I got to interview many people for video interviews, radio translations, newspaper interviews. And I said, well, I already know some people who may be interesting to talk with and to interview for the podcast. So that's where my first podcast, the Jazz Spotlight, started, I believe 5 years ago now. And I loved it. I was having a lot of fun. And the more I was learning about the medium and the industry, and the more I realized, or I was finding out about very interesting people in the online business world. The problem was that having a music podcast, I couldn't really interview them on a music podcast. It wouldn't have made much sense. And that's where my second podcast, The 360 Entrepreneur, started. And I really used that show as a tool for growing my professional network. So I would interview those people. With some of them, I also did some collaborations in the form of joint webinars. You mentioned the Podcast Success Summit. So I interviewed some of them for my digital conference. And as I was doing that and I started to do some work in the digital marketing space, more and more people started to come to me, Jürgen, and they would ask me questions about podcasting, all kinds of questions, hardware related. So what gear do I use? How have I managed to interview Grammy Award winning artists, New York Times bestselling authors, and this and that? And then at some point I said to myself, wait a second, instead of focusing on digital marketing, developing websites, I keep getting questions about podcasting. I ought to take a look at podcasting again as a possible opportunities for work. And that's where I started to do consulting. And then I realized that, yeah, this is really where I should focus my efforts, my attention, my resources. And that's how I really became somebody who focused on podcasting as a podcasting consultant. And then I also started another podcast called The Podcast Lab, which is all about podcasting. And now podcasting is really the air I breathe, basically.
Yeah. So it all sounds so planned. When you started out and discovered podcasting, So I guess there was a certain level of things evolving there when you realized that a lot of people were asking for your help and you'd developed this expertise over the years. Because I know from my own podcast, there's not just learning about the recording and the hardware and the software involved and then learning about editing and publishing and marketing the podcast. But as you said, you had two podcasts where you are interviewing guests. So there's the whole
process around how do you identify guests that would make a good contribution to your audience? How do you get them on board? Mm-hmm. How do you do the whole process of managing guests, managing their time and your time, and then following up and so on? So there's a whole lot of stuff there, isn't there? And I think right. you talked in one of your recent podcasts about all the things that you can learn from having done the podcast. Yeah, so to me that's a lesson that applies to a lot of things, I think. So talk to us a little bit more about that, because I think there's a lesson in that for even when people aren't doing a podcast, for many business owners.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, and that's something that it's true even for other forms of communication. For example, if one creates videos, or if one has a blog, or I don't know, does Facebook Live or things like that, I think that the mistake that many people make is that they don't really look at the medium as a strategic asset for their business. And obviously, I'm referring to people who, for example, have a podcast related to their business, like in your case, Jürgen. If somebody were to podcast just for fun, then it's a different story. But I think that oftentimes people don't really look at everything they have to offer and everything that their podcast potentially can bring their way. For example, some people just say, well, I want to interview big names. And when you ask them why, they don't really know. Mm. And for me, for example, if I were, I don't know, a coach in the health space, I wouldn't necessarily want to interview big names. I would want to interview people who could potentially become clients. On the other hand, if you were to say, well, okay, I want to interview big names at the beginning to increase the status of my podcast, so that then when I pitch a potential guest, I can say the list of previous guests includes this person, that person, and that other person, then those are decisions that make sense. So I think that people often have kind of tunnel vision and they say, for example, oh, okay, I want to interview big names, or I want to get sponsors. I want to monetize my podcast and I want to get sponsors. And they completely ignore other monetization opportunities that in some cases may even be quote unquote easier to reach. They are low-hanging fruit, but for whatever reason, they just focus on that one goal, which isn't always a bad thing, but sometimes it really leads to missing out on opportunities of growth, opportunities of business, and even opportunities of building relationships or growing one's network. So I would say it is good to be very specific with what you have, but at the same time, keep your eyes open and be aware of the fact that even though you may be focusing on one goal, there may be another goal or even a couple of goals that may be easier to achieve and that may even help you get to your big goal faster.
Mm, yeah, that's a really great point. And I often talk to people who wonder about monetizing their podcast, and they're so focused on advertising because that's right. All they really... Well, it's like you say, they just have tunnel vision. They focus on the advertising. They just think about that. And I say, well, unless you have tens of thousands in your audience, there's nobody really going to be spending big money advertising in your podcast. So you really need to look at the other opportunities, the low-hanging fruit, as you called it.
Yeah, so, and stop trying to be like other people, because I think that's also a mistake. We often lack critical thinking. And I say we because I'm an independent podcaster as well, so I'm not part of any big popular network. And I think that the mistake we make is we say, well, if this person has achieved these results by taking these 5 steps, if I were to emulate him or her and take the exact same steps, I'm going to get the exact same outcome, which is absolutely not the case. And oftentimes we don't think that, yeah, this person may have just started his or her podcast, but has been blogging for 10 years. So they already have dozens of thousands of followers. Whereas if you're just getting started nowadays and you're really new on the scene, the new kid on the block, then you may have 0 people in your audience. And so even if you follow the exact same steps or you spend the same amount of money, you have the exact same tools, whatever, the end result of the equation isn't necessarily going to be the same. You have to have critical thinking and realize that there are different parameters, the fact that different audiences lead to different things. All those things are very, very important to keep in mind when you're thinking about your podcast and the strategy that revolves around it.
Mm. Yeah, well, you mentioned the word strategy. So let's start talking a little bit about strategy and what kind of things need to be in place for a great podcast from the outset.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I think the first thing is to really have a strategy. So what do I mean by strategy? Strategy, I think it's a bit of a sexy word nowadays, like there's plenty, like influencer being one of the other ones. But it's really ask yourself, what do you want to achieve with your podcast? And I can take myself as an example to show what I mean here. As I said early on, with the 360 Entrepreneur, which is a show that wrapped up a couple of years ago now, my number one goal was to grow my network of contacts. And not only grow my network, but I use the interviews at the as the beginning of possible collaborations, joint webinars, interview them for my virtual summit, feature them for my membership site, which is now called Podcast Growth Hub, for different things. So it made sense to choose the format that made more sense for growing my network. So if I were to host a solo podcast, I wouldn't really have many interactions with people. Whereas if I focus on interviews, I know that every episode is going to help me add a person to my network, or most episodes, because some people may be already in my network. Mm. So that's one thing I did. On the other hand, with the Podcast Lab, which is my latest show, my newest show, and the one I really focus on, the goal of that show wasn't to grow my network. In fact, I didn't even want to conduct interviews because, as you said, I've published with all my podcasts combined almost 400 interviews. And yeah, I started, even though I love interviews, I was like, yeah, I don't feel like doing interviews. I want to do solo because I'm a podcasting consultant, but I don't have a podcast that discusses podcasting. So there, my goal was to have a podcast to showcase my expertise, to use that as the first step of the path that leads to a person hiring me to help him or her with their podcast, the podcast guesting systems, and things related to podcasting. So in that case, my goal was really sharing my expertise, and I kind of wanted to be, I don't like to use this word, but I wanted to be in the spotlight. So I wanted to do a solo show. However, because I know that different people can bring different perspectives, and different perspectives make for a more richful experience, I would say, I still added expert contributions in the form of audio snippets. So I don't do real interviews. I record answers by experts, and then I feature them here and there. So I think the first step of one's podcasting strategy should be, what of all the possible outcomes, what is the one I would want my podcast to do for me? Is it to grow my network? Is it to get speaking gigs? Is it to get people into my Facebook group? Is it to get people to buy my video course? Is it for people to buy my book? Is it for people to hire me as a consultant or coach? I think that's really the first question. And then everything has to basically lead to that direction. So the content you publish, the format you choose, the content you create, the people you interview, if you interview people, the platforms you promote your podcast on, all those factors should be basically pieces of the puzzle, which is your ideal goal. But oftentimes I think that people are just all over the place and they want to, for example, interview people who don't really make much sense on the grand scheme of things, or they focus on promoting their podcast on a specific platform because everybody else is doing it, but then the people they're trying to reach aren't even there. So I would say the very first thing to think about is, what do I want to get out of my podcasting endeavors?
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. And you used a lot of really good examples there in terms of the style of podcast, whether it's an interview or whether it's a solo show, or there's other formats, of course, that you could do with a podcast. And then where do you promote it? and you know what sort of guests, if you are doing an interview show, what sort of guests bring on. So all of that is determined by the purpose of the podcast. And then one of the other things that I'm very strong on is then understanding who the audience is for that podcast, which
right.
is the same thing, isn't it? So if you know why you're doing it and what you're trying to achieve, then that sort of determines the audience in some ways as well.
Yeah, so then you won't just post randomly on, I don't know, in Facebook groups or send random messages to people on LinkedIn hoping to get a listener. I mean, I always wonder, well, it makes me smile when I get random emails, random tweets, random posts, whatever, when people trying to get me to listen to their podcasts. And I think, I'm not even a good fit for you, Sean. I'm not sure why. And I don't understand why because they need to spend the time, even though they just copy and paste the messages, but they still need to do that. So I'm like, why wouldn't you spend that time in a more strategic way and actually promote your podcast to a person or a group of people who are likely to listen to your show and not basically just trying to promote it to everybody and their moms?
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. So what do you suggest then for, you know, once you've determined here's my audience and this is going back to what you were saying before, this is the purpose of my podcast, but clearly if you want to get that message out, then you'll want to be growing your audience. So how do you go about growing a podcast audience?
Well, I think that's a $1 million question. And I would say the first keyword there is patience. I mean, I've seen a post in a Facebook group, and you can hear me, I'm a pretty laid back guy. I like to have laughs, but sometimes I really get annoyed when I see people. I saw a post I think a couple of months ago of somebody in a Facebook group about podcasting and said something along the lines of, I've been podcasting for a couple of months now and I'm not seeing results. I'm thinking about quitting. What do you guys think? And I got so annoyed because I was thinking, you can ask anybody who has a community, whether they build it through email newsletters, through blogging, through video, through podcasts, through in-person events, whatever. And you can ask them how long it took. They're not going to tell you a couple of months, six months, a year. It takes a long time. And I think that people tend to say, yeah, I'm in it for the long run. It's a marathon and not a sprint, blah, blah, blah. But then in the end, it's not, they don't really believe what those things. And they look, as we were saying early on, they look at people who are quote unquote influencers or experts or whatever. And they say, well, if this person is doing ABC and they got X, I should do ABC and I'm going to get X. And that's absolutely not the case. So the first thing is to, I would say, be patient. Then the second thing is really try to get the most out of your content. And I think that's another mistake that we make as content creators, is that we should look at our content as a fruit and really try to squeeze it to get as much juice as possible. So for example, even though you are a podcaster, so you want people to listen to your podcast, your next best super fan may be somebody who follows you on LinkedIn, let's say, but doesn't necessarily listen to podcasts. Maybe depending on the topic of your show, they may not even know really what podcasts are or where to find them and all those kind of things. So for example, in my case, with the Jazz Spotlight, I know that the audience there, it's much different than the one for the Podcast Lab. People who listen to the Podcast Lab are people who are familiar to podcasting to one degree or another. So there, I don't have to put so much emphasis on educating them. Okay, this is what a podcast is, how you find them, and all those kind of stuff. On the other hand, in the music space, it's a little bit different. So there, I need to really keep that into consideration also when I market my podcast. Now, going back to the fruit aspect there, if somebody is on LinkedIn and follows you on LinkedIn, you want to make sure that you let them know that you have a podcast, and you do so by using the form of content that it's most appropriate for them. And that's where repurposing your content really comes into place. That's a strategy I used, Jürgen, when I started out with the Jazz Spotlight. I would basically take some episodes. I found some popular blogs and websites in the music business space, and I would write blog posts with a very specific goal. The blog posts were a sort of appetizer. they still provided value and they allowed me to cover specific topics, even topics that I wasn't an expert at because I interviewed somebody who was an expert. But the article allowed me to tap into existing audiences that consumed a different type of medium, written content, and use that article as an appetizer to lead them to the main course, which was the actual interview. And I would do it in a very simple way. I would, first of all, I checked that the editorial guidelines of the websites allowed for linking to third-party websites and stuff like that. And I would simply say something like, I recently interviewed Jürgen Strauss, and I would make that sentence a link to the show notes page of the episode. And then the article itself wouldn't be promoting the episode. It would be covering a couple of the key takeaways of the episode. Or in some cases, I even took a series of episodes and wrote a longer article. So you want to make sure that you really squeeze your content to get as much juice as possible, whether that's creating a series of mini videos based on the episode, whether that's creating blog posts, whether that's taking some cues from your episodes and create presentations. And when you're on a stage, you then leverage people's attention, the fact that everybody is looking at you, is listening to you, for directing people toward your podcast. So that's the second thing. And then the third thing I would say is to really, really, really think about things long-term. So if the content of your podcast or most of it is evergreen, which means that it's relevant today, next week, next month, and even a couple of years from now, then you want to make sure that you consistently promote that. I have an episode on pitching for the Podcast Lab, and that episode generates leads pretty much every single day or every single week. And it's an episode I published months and months ago, but I consistently promote it, and in that case, is connected to other loadable resource. So I see that even months later, that episode is still working for my business. So it's still getting people from iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify, whatever platform they use to listen to podcasts, to my email newsletter. So I would say it's really about these three things. I would say these are the three pillars that you really have to kind of keep into consideration. So one is to have patience. Then the second one is to really squeeze your content to get as much juice from it as possible. And then the third one is to keep thinking long-term. And the cherry on top, I would say, is not being afraid to experiment. So stop looking at what everybody else is doing, but really try to experiment, because you may find that Instagram is your best performing platform. You may find that no online platform really works for you, and maybe you have to mail flyers with the QR code. There are many different strategies you can implement, and the only way to know which really works for you, for your show, and for your audience and the people you're trying to reach is to try and experiment with each and every one of them until you find the one or the ones that are really getting some traction. And then you can...
Oops, we're losing the audio a bit there. Hopefully that's just temporary. So yeah, that's great advice. I love the experimentation, because I think, you know, as a podcast on innovation, that's definitely something that we encourage, and testing mm-hmm. things out, and you have to be prepared to fail. So patience is important as well, because yeah. You're not going to hit everything for the big new winning idea.
And may I add a point to your comment there, Jürgen?
Yeah.
I think we also tend to think that, well, we have to share the most polished version of ourselves. And that's not really the case. For example, with the Podcast Lab, sometimes I run a series of experiments and then I share everything. I share the results. And the cool thing about that is that the outcome of the experiment doesn't really matter, in the sense of, obviously it matters to me, but whether it's a failure or a success, is not gonna change the way it is perceived by people. Practical example. When I launched my podcast, I used a platform called Thunderclap. Are you familiar with it, Jürgen?
Yeah, I think they closed down recently, didn't they?
Oh, okay. I didn't even know. And yeah, so I used it, and basically the potential social reach of my Thunderclap campaign to promote my podcast was of over 500,000 people. So my experiment was, since people always want downloads, 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 I said, well, to what number of downloads does a potential social reach of 500,000 people lead to? And I don't remember the number, but I think it was something like maybe 132 people, something like super low like that, or even lower, to be honest. I don't remember. But people loved that because they said, they didn't really say, oh, that's a failure, you know, you suck or whatever. No, they said, oh, thank you so much for really trying that out, sharing what it led to. And I, in that case, for example, I hope that people realize that it's not because you interview somebody who has a big network, for example, that his or her network is going to lead to your podcast or that specific episode to go viral, to become a hit. So yeah, I think that, you know, the experimentation, it's great. And I would encourage more and more people to not only experiment with what they do, but even if possible, share the processes with their community, because that's going to show that you really are vulnerable and it's going to put you more at the level of people in your community versus just being the guru that it's a semi-god that everybody worships and whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's, I really love that advice because I'm just about to launch a new podcast. In fact, it's already launched, but it's a soft launch. So episode one hasn't been uploaded yet, and it's called Tales of Marketing Transformation. And one of the things I'm talking about there is I want to share my mistakes in terms of, you know, because I view those as feedback. So it's just
right
that there's feedback. So, okay, that didn't turn out the way I expected it to turn out, but what did I learn from that? And if I share those learnings with other people, then I'm adding contribution, but getting benefit out of the mistakes as well. So it gives me permission to make more mistakes. So I really
right. like... Right, and sometimes they work. I mean, sometimes the experimentation work out great or even beyond expectations, which is also...
So I love the philosophy of the experiment. The other thing that I was really fascinated by, because I'm a big believer in repurposing content, but I like your approach. I hadn't considered that actually, of essentially writing a guest blog post for other websites. Is that have I understood that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have a very practical ninja tip that I can share if you like, Jürgen.
Yeah.
Okay, great. When people ask me, oh, Jan, you have been featured on Inc. and Forbes and this and that, and I always say, yeah, but remember, I'm just a regular guy from Helsinki, Finland. And I say, the way you can go about that is not as hard as you may think. So you can do two things. Let's say you want to be featured on whatever publication, Founder Magazine, since I know you're in Australia. Let's take Founder as an example. So you can go about it in two ways. One is, as we said, you take your content and you use that as basically the basis of you becoming a columnist. So you look at the editorial guidelines. You see they are open for guest contributors. They allow you to link back to your website, to the show notes page, and these kind of things. Great. So you say, okay, I'm going to become a columnist who writes about innovation. And since I host a podcast about innovation, I know that every week or every month, I would have at least 1, 2, 3, 4, however many articles I can write based on the interviews I do. Granted, I'm not talking about the article being a transcription of the interview. I'm talking about the article being a standalone piece of content that provides value. But it can definitely be based on the episode or even a few episodes. And I did that for Founder Magazine, for example. I wrote a couple of articles where I took maybe key takeaways from 4 or even 5 different podcast episodes of mine. And throughout the articles, I linked to those people. So when I said that, okay, this piece of advice was shared by Jürgen Strauss, for example, I would link to the interview I conducted with Jürgen. And if somebody found that aspect interesting, they would go and listen to the specific episode to get the full meal. So that's the one way you can go about it, become a contributor. The other way is, and this is where my journalistic background comes into the picture, Jürgen, and is, look at people who already are columnists on whatever publication you want to be featured on and look at what they write. If you see that they write about your topic, let's say they write about innovation, you can get in touch with him or her and say, hey, Jürgen, I see you write about innovation and I actually host a podcast about innovation. And I was wondering, what are some of the topics you plan on covering in the future? The reason why I'm asking you this is that I've interviewed such and such, and I would have some great quotes that I think could fit well in your article. And as a journalist or somebody who has worked as a journalist, I know how much we love quotes. We like contributions that add value to the article. So most people are going to definitely be receptive to that. So then it may be that you don't necessarily contribute to every single article, but every now and then you may be able to, maybe once a quarter or something, to share what your guest had said on the podcast. Obviously, you want to make sure that you have permission to share what the guest said on a website or whatever. And then you can even add your two cents. So you then get mentioned as well. And guess what? Then you can say, hey, I've been featured here or I've been featured there. Mm.
Yeah, that's a really great strategy. I like that. I might have to steal that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it really depends. Some people love writing. They really want to put in the time. So I say, go for it. Become a columnist. Become a sort of point of reference for people who know that, okay, Jürgen is the one who writes about technology once a week or once a month or whatever. But if you feel that you don't love writing or you are too busy to do that on a regular basis or whatever, then the second way to go about it, it can work as well. So find somebody who's already writing and see what they plan on covering and see if there is ways you can contribute to that article and get mentioned or even get your podcast mentioned in their article.
Mm. All right. Now, we've been talking about guest blogging and or guest writing for publications. Now, mm-hmm. one of the other things, and I know you have a whole training program around this, is podcast guesting. So talk mm-hmm. to us a little bit about that and how you make that work. There's probably many principles that are similar.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely, for me, for this year that we're recording the interview, but even for following years or upcoming years rather, podcast guesting is definitely something I'm focusing more and more on. I think at the time of this recording, I've probably done between 40 and 50 guest interviews, which is already pretty good, but I definitely plan to doing many more. And the reason for me personally is that I've realized that there is a lot of traction that can come as a result of podcast guesting. I've seen interviews that I've done months ago, still directing people into my online community, Podcast Growth Mastermind, for example, a free Facebook group that everybody can join if they want to go to janilunga.com/community. And I know, Jürgen, you'll have that, probably the link in the show notes page.
Yep,
I've been hired by some people who have interviewed me. So I've just realized that there is a lot of power there and there is less work on my end. I don't want to sound lazy, but as you well know, Jürgen, and I know you also talked about this in another of your interviews, all the different moving parts of the podcasting workflow as the host. And sure, you may be outsourcing some of those parts, but there's still quite a lot of work involved. Whereas if you're a guest, you just need to be a little bit prepared. And that's all there is to it. And once you have mastered podcast guesting, it doesn't take you too much to show up prepared. So that's the reason why I'm focusing more and more on podcast guesting and why, as you said, I have a course. I do consulting as well with clients specifically on podcast guesting. Now, if somebody's here with you and I, Jürgen, and already hosts a podcast, then they already have a big advantage because they already are familiar with how podcasting works. They have the equipment and all that kind of jazz, which is fantastic. So they can really get started and ask themselves a question similar to a question we tackled early on in the interview. And the question is, what do I want to get out of podcast guest interviews? Yeah. Is it to simply grow my network? Is it to be a speaker? So for example, if you're a speaker and you wish to speak at a specific event or conference, what you could do is look, if the founder or the manager or whatever hosts a podcast, why not to be interviewed by him or her? And then after the interview, see, perhaps they're going to tell you, hey, by the way, you said during the interview that you're a speaker. Would you be interested in speaking at our event? Or you can even say, hey, you're going to be seeing my name soon again because I will apply to speak at your event. And that's a great way to go about it. And obviously, you can reverse the roles if you're a host. So interview people who organize conferences you'd like to speak at. But as a guest, that's a thing you can do. If you have a book, you can say, okay, I want to go on a sort of virtual book tour and be interviewed on many podcasts and then have them those interviews being published around the launch of my book. So there's many different goals there or reasons why you may want to be a guest. Once you have identified that, then start to do the research. And as a podcaster, you're already familiar with platforms like Apple Podcasts, so you can start from there. Another thing you can do is you can look at online communities, Facebook groups. For example, my Facebook group at the time of this recording has over 2,800 people. And every now and then we post basically calls for guests or guests who pitch themselves. So you can connect with people there. You can look at your existing network. And you can do another thing that many people, when I share this, they go like, what? Really? I've never thought about this. And it's very simple. And this is more for the long-term side of things. If you plan on being a podcast guest, and actually, Jürgen, are you somebody who plan to do podcast guesting more and more in the future?
Yes, definitely. That's on okay. The plan for this year as well. I've done a little bit, not as many as you have, but yeah.
Great. So you're going to love this one. And this is especially for thinking maybe a couple of years from now, when maybe you start to feel as if you're sort of hitting a plateau in terms of interviews opportunities, and is to go on Amazon, look at the book section of Amazon, and if you're an author, just enter your name or the title of your book, and then scroll down and look at the authors that the Amazon algorithm suggests, and then go to a platform like Apple Podcasts, and enter those people's name in the search bar so that you're going to find the podcasts that those people have been featured on. If you aren't an author, then just enter the keyword you focus on, innovation, communication, cooking, yoga, whatever. Find some authors there that Amazon suggests you look into or their books, and then do the same. So look at what are the connected authors, or then when Amazon says, people who bought this book also bought these other books. And then do the same, enter their names in the Apple Podcast search bar. And I refer to Apple Podcast because at the moment is the biggest podcasting platform. And then you're going to see the list of podcasts that have been featured on. So that is going to make sure that you never run out of potential, let's say, stages to be on as a podcast guest. So I would say those are the key steps you need to take in order to get started as a podcast guest in terms of the research and all those kind of things. And then the second thing I would add related to that is you also want to make sure that you have some presentation assets in place. Those are things that you can use when pitching yourself or if somebody is pitching you on your behalf, then you have something to show the host that immediately draws his or her attention and make them go like, oh, yeah, I would definitely be interested in interviewing Jürgen. And not just tell them, well, go on my website and you'll find everything. You want to really decrease the amount of work a host needs to carry out in order for him or her to say yes to your pitch or somebody's pitching on your behalf.
So I have a dedicated page and you've got a really good one. I might model off. So, but that's
awesome.
But that's really brilliant advice. Using those various search engines, and you've got to consider something like Amazon and certainly Apple Podcasts as search engines, in a way that you can take the information that they present to you. Now, Amazon obviously is presenting you that information because they think you might buy those books as well because you're interested in the topic. But for you, it's a way to say, okay, well, there's some information that I can then use and leverage in a way to track down people who have podcasts that I might be able to contribute to their audience.
Exactly. And you may find that you spend maybe an hour doing that, or you have an assistant doing that for you a couple of hours, and suddenly you have a list of 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 podcasts that you can be interviewed for. So you're basically have your plate full for the next month or even a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. I love that. And the other advice, I mean, I'll add some advice to this for anybody listening to this about podcast guesting. And well, this applies if you're running your own podcast, but you're probably more likely to be doing it. And that's the preparation. It always astounds me. I've been on some podcasts as a guest and people have said, oh, you've listened to an episode because I, you know, reference something or I know what questions are coming up. And I said, well, of course, why wouldn't I listen to the episodes, past episodes, if I'm going on the podcast? That's part of the preparation. And also, when I've interviewed people on this podcast, occasionally somebody will express surprise that I've actually researched about them and found out some things about them. And I said, well, that's part of what I do.
Right? Hello. Why wouldn't
you do that? Yeah. So a little bit of preparation.
I think it's key. And I think one thing that it's important, I love what you just shared, Jürgen. If you don't mind, I'm just going to piggyback on that. One thing that I think is important for everybody to keep in mind is that even though as a guest, you may say, well, I want to be exposed to new audiences and opportunities for my business, talk to my prospects and all these great things, you have to remember that you're going to be having a conversation with somebody. So you listening to an episode or a couple of episodes, it's going to make you realize if the host is somebody that you would see yourself have a cup of coffee with, a glass of wine with, or whatever, virtually. And if you don't get a good vibe, maybe you don't like his or her accent, you don't like the way they talk, you don't like their style, whatever, which is okay, then you're probably better off going somewhere else. Because if you say, well, I'm gonna show up anyways, and somehow the quote-unquote chemistry between you and the host isn't there, listeners who listen to the show on a regular basis are gonna be like, okay, something is off in this episode compared to all the other episodes. And they're not gonna point the finger at the host. They're gonna point at you because the host is the common denominator who's always there, whereas guests come and go. So it's very important, as you said, Jürgen, to do your research, and not only as the host when you interview somebody, but even as the guest, so that you show up prepared. I mean, I've done interviews where the guest kept saying, hey man, thanks for having me. And when they say man, for me it's clear that because they don't even know what my name is. And I smile because I think, you know, I'm probably not the only person who will make that connection. Also, somebody who listens to the show on a regular basis, or if somebody says, Jürgen, I'm a huge fan of your show, and they don't even know what the name of the show is, or they don't know how to pronounce your name. For me, I'm like, well, why should you fake enthusiasm when then you appear to be fake? Because people aren't stupid. People who listen to the show on a regular basis, they are used to a certain kind of chemistry, to a certain kind of listening experience. And if the show, or the episode rather, you're featured on as a guest doesn't have that, they're probably going to go like, what's wrong with this guest? Why was he or she behaved or shared information in a way that didn't really kind of fit the standards of InnovaBuzz podcast, for example?
Yeah, that's great advice. And I was going to say earlier, we were talking about podcasting and guesting and blogging, that having a pod and connecting with influencers or getting guests on that might be leads for your business, having a podcast is brilliant because it opens the door to that relationship. But the point I was going to make on top of what you're just saying is it is a relationship that you're starting when you get on a podcast and either interview someone, as I'm doing, or you jump on somebody else's interview and you're a guest on their interview. It's kind of the start of a relationship, and to build on that. So, and it's also a relationship with the listeners. So for me, you know, if the value is not coming through, if the fun that we have in our conversation is not coming through, then the relationship isn't going to go anywhere, and the relationship with the listeners also gets shaky.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not, and I think it's clear for everybody, but I want to say it out loud. We aren't saying that every single interview you do is going to be leading to something tangible, you know, it's going to help you get new clients. But I think that the mistake both hosts and guests make, and actually I see so many people make this mistake, is they chase. So if it's a host, as soon as the interview is finished, okay, thank you, bye, on to the next guest. If it's a guest, okay, thanks, bye, on to the next show. And sometimes simply having 30 seconds, 1 minute, or 2 minutes after the interview is finished can really lead to great things. So I would say if you have 30 minutes time slots as a guest or even as the host, always make sure that you have 1 minute or 2 minutes after the interview, after you've stopped recording, to have a quick chat with the host, because more interview opportunities may come as a result. The host may be interested in something you said on the podcast. Maybe they want to hire you, or other way around. Maybe they host a conference, they would like you to speak there, or they have a collaborative idea. So always make sure that you have a couple of minutes, even just 1 minute after the interview is finished. Because for me personally, when it comes to building something with the host and the guest, that's often where the magic really happens. Sure, the interview itself, it's fantastic and it's a great time. But typically the interview, it's more for the listeners. Whereas the post-interview chat is really for you and the host, or you and the guest.
I did ask you if you could stay on for a minute afterwards. And generally I just look for feedback on how the interview went from the guest's point of view and how I did as an interviewer. You know, sometimes that conversation leads somewhere else. And then I do a lot of follow-up. So it's in the follow-up where sometimes other things come of it, and I have had business come of it, and I have had an opportunity. In fact, in a week or two, I'll be on a creativity summit with Jamie.
Can it be Jamie J?
No. Hang on, no. Have I got it open over here? Anyway, it'll be gone by the time we publish this. So Jamie Greenberg. And anyway, that came about out of our podcast, but it was in the follow-up later on. So I think it's
nice.
And I say at the end, I mean, that's kind of my standard wrap-up, let's keep in touch, but I really mean that. So it's not I do a lot of follow-up,
Yeah, and I mean, if somebody if you leave an interview and you're like, well, yeah, and you don't feel like connecting with the host or the guest further, that's fine. I mean, I'm not saying that every interview you do, the person should become your best friend. But if you had a very good time, I think you would be making yourself and him or her a disservice by not keeping in touch, as you well said, Jürgen.
Mm. Yeah, well, I could talk for ages about podcasting and all the benefits of podcasting and how to do it. And clearly, you have a lot of experience and you really know your stuff. But I'm respectful of your time, so I think it's time we move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers, in addition to all the insights you've given us so far, that's going to inspire people to go and do something awesome today. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Oh, Jürgen, you know, I've never thought about this question. Can I quickly make a side comment before answering the question?
Yeah.
Because what has just happened here, it's a great example of the fact that if somebody wasn't prepared, one would be like, oh, wow, that's a great question, and I need half an hour to think about it. But if somebody listens to your show, they know that the buzz is really present part of your show. And I'm laughing because I have a client who has a similar segment in her show where she has a series of questions that are asked to every single guest. And sometimes I smile when people are like, oh, wow, I've never thought about this. And I'm like, well, had you listened to any episode,
that's right,
you would have had the answer. So to answer your question, Jürgen, the number one thing to be more innovative, I think it ties into what we were talking early on, really, which is not being afraid to experiment, and also have patience. I think we are so used to everything being so fast and getting results immediately and this and that, that sometimes we don't realize that for certain things to work, there has to be a window of time. So for certain numbers to have statistical relevance, 2 hours, 1 day, 1 week isn't a good chunk of time. So don't be afraid of experimentation and really set time apart to experiment and be patient, and you're going to see experimentation working with you one way or another.
Mm, yeah, that's great advice. I love that when you said it earlier, and I think that really fits in with the innovation tip. Yeah. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I've been really observant. So for example, early on when I said about kind of pivoting toward podcasting and really making that the core topic my business revolves around, it's something that obviously I didn't have two people ask me the question and I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. But as I was answering questions on social media, on by email, on Skype, on interviews, I kind of took a step back and said, wait a second, here I see this happening on a regular basis. I'm spending my time. I think I ought to have a second look at that. So I did an observation, or I was observant, but at the same time, I also am observant still today, and I do so in my Facebook group. So I look, for example, at recurring questions, or when somebody, and I know Jürgen, you are a member of the group, so you saw when joining the group, I ask a few questions. So I look, what are the common answers that come up to those questions? I look at my own content. What are the popular types of podcast episodes? As I said earlier on, for example, the one about pitching is doing very well. But I also tap into my community. So I may ask questions through polls. I may ask questions to people even outside of my community. So I would say be observant and really tap into what's around you, whether it's members of your community that you can poll, that you can ask questions to, you can look at what their popular or frequently asked questions are, as well as outside of your community. Even if you're just getting started, you can join Facebook group, whatever, and look at what people say. And that's where you may come with a very good idea, or you may come up with kind of validation with an idea that has been at the back of your mind for a while now.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I like that you say, you know, you ask a lot of questions. So it's not just looking at something and deciding this is it, but actually asking questions and validating the thought process. So yeah, great advice. What's your favorite resource that you use most often?
Yeah, there are a couple of things. I would say as a kind of umbrella term, I would say processes. And then in terms of actual tools, I would say project management tools. So I've been using Trello for years and I still am using it and I love it. But over the last maybe 4 months or so, I started to use another project management tool called Plutio. And I like the fact that Plutio really tries to be the one tool that one needs to use. So they basically allow you to really centralize many of the tasks you carry out. So project management, communications, invoicing, and they have down the road, they have also scheduling. So I may use that for scheduling as well. So for me personally, I think that when it comes to innovation and productivity is about processes. And I would say project management tools are a must. Something like Zapier can really help you make different tools communicate. And I would also add something like a live chat tool. I use one called, I think it's pronounced CurioBot, which basically allowed me to create different bot sequences to have on my website, because you can't expect a person who visits your website or who visits a specific web page to take the exact action you would like them to take. And I think that a bot can really help them can help you show them the way, so to speak. Yeah, so processes, task management or project management tools. And if you want to even kind of take that to the next level, something like Zapier for automations and a bot tool can be very powerful.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. I haven't looked at Plutio. I looked at it in the early days. We have used Trello, but mainly we're using
Asana, right?
Asana now. So might have another look at Plutio, but I have to own up to being a shiny toy addict, so I need to make sure I don't get
trapped. You should have told me earlier. I wouldn't have mentioned Plutio.
That's why I asked the question, because I like learning about things that you're using. But I know you're a big fan of systems and processes and having everything documented. And I have that in my list of things to talk about. But I know that, you know, we're getting tight on time. So we'll move on to the fourth question then. What's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Yeah, I would say two words or three words. The first ones are project four words. I lost count here. The first ones are project management tool. And the last word is calendar. So whether it's Asana, it's Trello, it's Bluedio, it's Basecamp, it's anything else, you want to have a project management tool and then you want it connected to a calendar. For me personally, that's the best way to keep everything I work on my own business on track, as well as the work I carry out with clients or for my clients.
So you have the deadlines pop up in your calendar along with
appointments
and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good way to do it. Hmm. All right. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Yeah, I mean, this is something you have already had this answer in a past episode about the being yourself.
Yeah.
But I think I would really say be yourself 100%. So I want to, because I think, okay, here's what I'm going to share that maybe makes the point come across for people. One of the most recurring feedback I get from people who listen to my podcast guest interviews and are people who didn't know about me, they say, oh, I really love your style. You're such a laid back guy. Mm. So even though the content is great and they praise me about that and yada, yada, most times people talk about that aspect. And the fact that, for example, I make fun about my macaroni accent, I try to make jokes, I laugh. And I think that's something that make people gravitate toward me, and it's something that makes me stand out. So I'm not trying to be, when I started out, I thought that I needed to be formal in order to be professional. Then I realized that that's not who I am. And me being quote unquote informal, it's really who I am. And for me, it's great because I don't have to think the way I'm talking with you now, Jürgen, is the same way I talk with friends on, I don't know, a Saturday night, is the same way I talk on my own podcast, in my courses, during my consulting calls. And that's something that really makes me, number one, personable, and number two, unique. And actually, my full name is Yannick, so I could have said, and number two, Yannick, but you know, I didn't want to go there. So to everybody listening, I would say definitely take inspiration by people, but then really add your own ingredients and make your own special sauce, because there really isn't anybody like you. And I think also what we talked about earlier on, experimentation helps you build your you being spontaneous and just being who you are, really.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. The idea of looking at models and learning from models is one thing. I mean, you can learn so much from a lot of wonderful people out there, but getting into the position of trying to copy them for the sake of copying them, and you know, you spoke earlier about if X works for this person, then that doesn't mean that X works for you in your situation. So, and it's the same here, isn't it? So,
and absolutely.
The other thing I'd comment on that is if you're trying to suppress your personality because you think you come across more professional by doing that, that is very draining. It's a lot. Takes a lot less energy just to be yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, at some point, because that's also one thing, if you are like that, for example, if you say, and to me happened once, I met one guy here in Helsinki and said, you know, I've been thinking about podcasts and I even developed my podcasting voice. And I was thinking like, okay, that sounds weird. For me, when I'm, for example, at conferences, people approach me, it's like, yeah, and I feel as if I've known you for a long time.
That's right.
And for me, that's exactly what I want to hear, because I'm just the same. Or they say, oh, you're exactly the way I thought you were going to be. Well, people usually tell me that I'm taller than they thought. But when it comes to my personality, and I say, well, yeah, because I'm just me. So I think that you being just the way you are and embrace your flaws. For example, English is not my mother tongue. I make mistakes. I trip on my tongue. I've interviewed Grammy Award winning artists, New York Times bestselling authors, top entrepreneurs, all people who would have had every right in the world to criticize me for, you know, grammatical mistakes I made and whatever. And nobody have ever told me anything in a negative way. We may have made jokes about them, about my accent and stuff like that. And that's something I embrace and that really makes me who I am.
Hmm. Well, I think you don't need to be ashamed of about your English at all. You speak what is six or seven languages? So,
a couple less than seven, I wish.
Yeah. Okay. I it's funny because in Australia, it's this is going off on a tangent a little bit, but in Australia, English is the number one language, and unfortunately, it's changing over the last 10 years or so. But before that, people were really reluctant to embrace any other language or even culture other than English. And now it's changing a little bit because the, you know, heavy influence of migrants from all around the world. So there's, you know, a big Chinese population, there's from other Asian countries as well. So that, you know, the Mandarin language is widely spoken. Other European languages are widely spoken. So people are starting to embrace that and it's changing a little bit. But the idea that, you know, there is just one language and if you don't speak that language, you don't fit in is kind of, to me, an anathema.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, obviously, this is a topic for a completely different interview, but I think it also has to do with geography. For example, for me, I can really see that in that respect, the difference between Finland and Switzerland. Now, Switzerland is in the middle of everything. You drive a couple of hours in any direction, you're in a different country. We are a country with four national languages. So for me, it's kind of normal. Being at least bilingual or trilingual or whatever, it's kind of normal. But then when I moved to Finland, which is already more isolated, I've realized that, of course, it makes sense. And what you said about Australia, for me, it's not surprising because if one thing, and I love Australia, I've had the pleasure of being there. But if we really think about it geography-wise, it's a huge island. So it kind of makes sense that, in a way, it's been more isolated than a country like Switzerland or Germany, which are really in the heart of many other, or not in the heart, but in between many other countries. And it's relatively easy to get influences from, I don't know, Poland or Italy or France or whatever other country.
That's right, yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Jan. This has been really fantastic. Where can people reach out and say thank you for all that you've shared with us today in this fun interview?
Sure. First of all, thank you so much, Jürgen. The pleasure was definitely mutual. I had a blast here with you on the InnovaBuzz podcast. And I mean, I'm all over the place. It's pretty easy to find me. But I think the best way for people to join myself, but you as well, Jürgen, because as I said, you are a part of the Podcast Growth Mastermind, which is, again, a free Facebook group people can join, is to go to yanilunga.com/community. So that's YANNILUNGA. So yanilunga.com/community. And you can join there. Jürgen, myself, and thousands of podcasters, people in the podcasting space, and podcasting enthusiasts from pretty much all over the world, really.
Yeah, and we look forward to seeing you there. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes so that it's easy for you to click through. Now, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation?
Sorry, say again, you cut you off. What's the number one piece of advice
you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in innovation?
Oh, that's a very, very, very powerful one. Well, I would say that leaders, for me personally, and especially when it comes to innovation, are people who aren't afraid to look, think, and act outside the box. So this ties also into experimentation that I had talked about early on, but I really believe that it is like that. So if you want to be a leader, and even more so if you're in the innovation space, really try to look, think, and do things that are a little bit outside the box, and in a way, things that maybe some people, when hearing about those, they may go like, this person is crazy, or really? Are they really doing that? Because oftentimes those are the people that ended up at some point being the ones that are kind of pioneers or trailblazers.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a lot of stories around that, isn't there? And it's good to remember that, because occasionally I find myself in a situation where I get that first feedback, you know, are you crazy or what are you doing? if you believe in what you're doing, then remember that, you know, those people often cause the change. The people, what did Steve Jobs say? The people that are crazy enough to think they can change the world often are the ones that do.
Exactly.
All right. Finally then, Jan, who would you like me to interview on a future InnovaBuzz podcast and why?
Yeah, well, I mean, I know so many people, so I could make you like a list of thousands of people. But yeah, I would probably
I want to do this for a long term, right? Patience.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely share that maybe later, but for people, you know, to respect people's times here, the one person I would probably mention right now is my friend and client Twyla Kay, and her name is spelled Twyla, and her last name is Kaye, and her site is twylakay.com. And the reason why I would mention her is that she covers a topic that is kind of underrepresented in the business space, but I think it's one of the most impactful things, which basically is relationships for business people. So she shares advice for example, entrepreneurs, business owners who have a spouse or have a partner or things like that, or have a family, as well as for the spouses of somebody or partners of somebody who is a business owner. And I think it's not necessarily a sexy topic like technology and this and apps and web design, but I think it's something really important, because at the end of the day, we are people. And if we go through a tough time in our personal life, whether it's because of our relationship, anything else, that is definitely going to affect our performance and the impact we have on our business. So because of that, I would say that a conversation with Twyla Kay would definitely be very interesting for everybody who loves InnovaBuzz and who really wants to hear more about what are some of the things I should be on the lookout for, or I should try avoid so that I don't, for example, my life choice of starting a business doesn't have a negative impact on my partner, or what can I do, or how should I take the times where my partner who runs a business is stressed or anything like that.
Yeah, that sounds like a fascinating topic to explore in more depth. So I'm really looking forward to that, and we'll get a
great and happy to introduce you to her. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us today. I've really enjoyed this. This has been absolutely sensational, Jan. So I wish you all the best for the future. I look forward to staying in touch in the podcast growth community, and also staying in touch with you personally. So let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jürgen.
Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and thoroughly engaging conversation with Jan, and like me, learnt a lot. Jan is so full of great ideas around podcasting and is clearly passionate about the medium. I love the suggestions of using the content of your podcasts to write guest posts in other blogs or articles in publications as a means to grow your audience. I might steal that idea myself, in fact. He also shared some innovative tips to find potential podcasts to be interviewed on. Of course, there was so much more in the interview with Jan, and I'd love to know what you took away from Jan's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which can be found at innovabiz.co/Jan Ilunga. That is YANNILUNGA. YANNILUNGA. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Jan Ilunga. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Jan there, as well as links to his website, his podcasts, and the other resources that we spoke about. Jan suggested I interview Twyla Kay, a relationship coach and business consultant, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Twyla, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Jan Ilunga. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. Tune in again next week. We've got more fantastic guests lined up, including TV anchor and co-founder of Lady Drinks, Joya Das, Oscar Trimboli of the Deep Listening podcast, as well as Simon Lamy of The Brain Wheel. Stay connected. Subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.